On the Media is listener-supported. That is, supported by you listeners. We can use any help you can give. But if you just kicked in a little bit each month, it would really help us plan for the future. So here's the deal. To the first 500 of you to contribute $7 a month, you can get our limited edition Breaking News Consumer's Handbook refrigerator magnet. And we'll also throw in a mug or a tote bag, your choice. We really hope that you'll take a minute to think about what this show means to you and make a contribution. So just go to onthemedia.org/donate, or even easier, just text OTM to 69866. That's OTM to 69866, and a really simple form will pop up, and you can chip in $7 a month to support our show, and we'll send you one of those shiny new magnets, and thanks.
From withheld tax returns to tangled conflicts of interest to rumors about Trump's Mar-a-Lago guests, the first 100 days of the new administration haven't shaped up to be exactly transparent or even translucent. Exactly who exerts influence over the Trump administration and how they do so remain enduring mysteries. A White House announcement on Friday further fed that concern.
Just into us, the Trump administration says it will keep White House visitor logs private, breaking with a precedent set by the Obama administration. The White House citing, quote, the grave national security risks and privacy concerns for White House visitors as a reason for the move.
In the words of Alex Howard, deputy director of the Sunlight Foundation, the new White House appears to be, quote, allergic to transparency. Alex, it's hay fever season. Welcome to the show.
I'm blowing pollen out of my nostrils as we speak.
Oh, that's a fetching image.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get to the administration's rationale or rationalization for this move, perhaps it's belaboring the obvious, but I guess I should ask you why it's important that we know who is calling on the White House.
One of the things that I think many people who are concerned about the state of American democracy wonder is how much influence the public has on government, how much the special interests in the world, industrial companies, post-industrial companies, influence our executive, influence Congress through lobbying activity. And the Sunlight Foundation has been a proponent of improving lobbying disclosure as long as we have existed. We said, in fact, in a sworn testimony to Congress in 2011, that visitor logs are a flawed but meaningful window into who is visiting whom and when that can be used in concert with other filings, with other information, to pull together a mosaic of how power is being influenced, how deliberative discussions and decisions that might not be disclosed in of themselves may be influenced. And in many cases, those meetings can help to at least give you a picture of who is talking to whom, and if they're registered to lobby on certain issues, to understand what it might be about. And that kind of insight is, I think, useful to hold power to account, which is at its best what the public and media working together do in a representative democracy.
Now, Sean Spicer, the presidential press secretary, said in his daily briefing, now, before you go, you know, talking about your hero, Barack Obama, and how transparent he was, you know, remember, he didn't release names of visitors till he was sued, and he was redacting the ones that he didn't want to be public. And that's not necessarily wrong, is it?
I think on this particular issue, though, it's worth noting that the Obama administration went to bat in 2013 when they were faced by continuing lawsuits from a conservative watchdog called Judicial Watch. And the decision made by a judge named Merrick Garland, who the nation may be familiar with as well in D.C., was that these, in fact, were presidential records. And even though they then had the discretion to withhold them, the Obama administration continued to disclose them. They proactively disclosed visitor logs that were then used by reporters from the right, the left, everywhere in between, and indeed by White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer's employer at the time, the Republican National Committee, where he was a communications director, as evidence for influence within the administration, putting, I think, the lie to the contention that they are not useful for transparency. The contention that he is making that it was a reversion to what existed before is accurate. Prior to the Obama administration, no administration was publishing open data of visitor logs on the internet. The Obama administration started, they continued when they didn't have to, and the Trump administration is rolling that back. However much they want to spin it, this is being less open than the previous administration, and the public should know that.
And yet, with some justification, Spicer argues that the so-called Transparency Administration, which was significantly less transparent than it claimed it would be, did take the opportunity to redact some names on those lists that never became public, and that it's hypocritical for the press or anyone else to set that administration as the standard. Anything to that?
It is accurate to say that the Obama administration carved out exemptions in its policy for what it was actually going to put out, those including the personal guests of the Obama children, or the guests of the Obamas when they came to their birthday parties, or the names of potential Supreme Court justices. But the policy itself stated that those exemptions would be justified and the records themselves would still be available down the line. So contentions that these have been scrubbed entirely, I think, are without merit. Contentions that these records were scrubbed prior to disclosure on the internet were accurate because, in fact, the only proponents of radical transparency, whereby every single part of a record that includes something like someone's social security number, like, say, mine, since I'm in there, should be put on the internet, are really crypto-anarchists of the kinds who support publishing medical records or, quote-unquote, pristine documents in the way that WikiLeaks has done. And that's not something we should be advocating for any United States government entity at any level of government to be doing with our private data. That would decrease public trust in governments to keep our data safe, which have to be acknowledged are already at historic lows.
All right. We've discussed the White House. Now let's talk about the Florida White House, Mar-a-Lago, the Trump resort, where the president spends most weekends, sometimes with foreign leaders, where who knows who the president is seeing, because there seems neither to be a record kept nor much of a security apparatus to keep an eye on them. What's going on there?
Well, it certainly looks like an unprecedented nexus of public interest, public business, and private interests and private business. The Mar-a-Lago resort was built by wealthy American with the idea that it would eventually be used by a president. And that, in fact, has come to fruition. But the physical infrastructure of the place was never upgraded to match the same requirements that 1600 Pennsylvania and the White House has. And that includes the virtual requirements and the expectations of disclosure and security. It's safe to say that somewhere amidst the email and the calendar invites and the Androids and iPhones carried by the president's staff, that there may indeed be a record of who is visiting when and what they're talking about. But that is not something that the public is being informed about. And certainly that there is not a record similar to that of the Secret Service visitor logs that could be disclosed, as indeed a group of lawmakers and Congress has asked for there to be. The Secret Service has said that's too expensive and they don't have the capacity for it, to which we'd respond, well, if the president's going to do public business there and is going to call it his winter White House or southern White House, then there should be an expectation of public disclosure and transparency. The White House contends that it is inviting the press in to take some, you know, a couple questions here and there and is sharing pictures.
Or you don't get pictures because at least in Florida, you know, I think it's fair to say you cannot have transparency and opacity at the same time. And aides literally put black trash bags over windows so that no photos could be taken of the president's golf date with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. That event very literally went dark.
Yes, I remember seeing the pictures from the press corps stuck in a room with black plastic trash bags over the windows. We saw pictures of the not state dinner happening between the Trump family and the leadership of China, which indeed looked a lot like access. But in terms of what actually came up and what was discussed, we don't know that so much. We know that there was some interesting confluence of events happening around the same time, say with respect to granting Ivanka Trump trademark deal in China in and around that dinner. But dinner conversation itself is not something that was disclosed, only pictures of them. And indeed, pictures like this have been a major part of the Trump administration's portfolio of engagement with the public. This is carrying on a tradition that the Obama White House, I think, was quite adept in shaping its own image and its own communications through social media and going directly to the public online. And we view that as a form of transparency theater, where you get pictures of meetings and pictures of people talking, but you don't get the substance of the conversation.
Now, as I was alluding to earlier, the Obama administration's rhetoric and claims about transparency didn't always match reality. They did a lot, for example, in the drone program without informing the public of how targeting decisions were made and, in fact, where the strikes took place. But in many ways, it was the most transparent administration possibly in American history, and even eventually had a web page called open.whitehouse.gov, which had all sorts of information about business being transacted and data from the White House and other executive agencies. What has become of open.whitehouse.gov?
Well, the Trump administration announced it would stop paying for it. It was contracted out to a firm called Socrata, a Seattle-based tech company that specializes in hosting data on its servers. And as far as I know, if you go to it now, it instantly reverts to the disclosures page of the White House site, which is empty. But the data itself is still hosted by the National Archives. If you go to open.obamawhitehouse.archives.gov, you can find it there. It is not as accessible as it was because the archives is not paying for it to be searchable on the web, but you can download a huge chunk of this national history here and unpack it on your computer and search through it. Nearly 6 million records still may remain accessible to the public because the National Archives, doing its job, made sure these presidential records remain open and accessible.
Although that history ends abruptly on January 20th.
I think a lot of things ended abruptly on January 20th.
It is now conventional wisdom that the Trump administration was swept into office because of widespread distrust of not just government, but all institutions, and suspicion about how the insiders were taking care of one another and not the public at large, that the people were unempowered, indeed ignored. And yet, as the administration gets to 100 days, evidence is mounting that nothing is being done to engender trust. Au contraire, they're shuttering the windows into the process, and yet there doesn't seem to be any great hue and cry from the public at large, or especially Trump voters. What's wrong with this picture?
A country that is more polarized in, I think, a sense than it ever has been and continues to be, where you've got different spheres of media consumption, as you've documented here, I think that it's going to take a lot more documented corruption, incompetence, and genuine scandal by press and pundits that people trust on Trump's base side to really shift the opinion of Republicans on a large scale regarding him. We are seeing historically low approval ratings in the first 100 days of a presidency right now at a national level, but I think it's going to take a while longer before people truly become dissatisfied based upon performance. Certainly the polling we've seen suggests that most Americans don't trust the integrity or character or honesty of this president, and that is something to be concerned about in terms of our national ability to do things together. It is something that affects our trust in government. And unless we see accountability, transparency, I think, will actually make this even more uncomfortable. Doesn't mean we shouldn't do it, but we're missing the vital component where the president himself puts himself up for accountability, and that includes something like, say, disclosing his taxes.
Alex, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Alex Howard is Deputy Director of the Sunlight Foundation, a nonprofit advocate of open government.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.